Welcome to the virtual business meeting of the West Virginia State Medical Association. We wish we had been in person to enjoy our annual health summit at the Greenwood. We have the opportunity to conduct our meeting virtually. Be present to swear in the newly elected West Virginia State Medical Association officers. It is my pleasure to introduce the West Virginia State Medical Association officers for 2020 and 2021. President-elect Shafiq Siraj, Vice President Dr. Lisa Costello, Treasurer Dr. Ann Banfield, Council Chair, myself, Dr. Sherry Young, Senior Counselor at Large, Dr. Bradley Hall, Junior Counselor at Large, Dr. Paula Taylor, Delegate to the American Medical Association, Dr. Hoyt Burditz, and alternate delegate to the American Medical Association, Dr. Bradley Henry. I'd now like to invite our friend, the Honorable Justice Evan Jenkins, to join us to administer the oath of office.
Well, thank you, Dr. Young. A little bit ago, I sent Danny a quick text and said, would you mind if I took just one moment of personal privilege before I administer the oath? And he was gracious enough to say yes. Just a couple of quick things. One, thank you to the State Medical Association and your leadership for an incredible year. What a year it has been. Your extraordinary leadership, your passion, reminding us once again that you truly are the most essential of the essential workers. So thank you for all you all have done. You know, council meeting, the House of Delegates, the leadership of State Medical, no meeting will ever be the same with the passing of Dave Avery. So I wanted to just take a quick moment to express my regrets and the sense of loss of how much Dave Avery has meant to this organization over the years, and how much our prayers are with Elaine and Seth and his entire family. So we miss Dave Avery. He will always be in our memories. To Dr. Young, it was truly an honor to swear you in last year. Little did I know that in a matter of months, in the capacity of the Supreme Court, we would be calling on your outstanding leadership in Kanawha County and Charleston with a COVID case within the judiciary. So to all of your leadership, I have seen firsthand the incredible work and leadership Dr. Young has shown this past year in Charleston, in Kanawha County, and made a huge positive impact. No one would have expected when you took the oath a year ago what your year would be like. But I can tell from the front rows, I have seen what an incredible leader you have been this year. So thank you, Dr. Young. Adam, the first husband of the State Medical, good job this year. And for Gabby, the first daughter of the State Medical Association, what a great year. So thank you, Dr. Young, very much. Absolutely. To Dr. Hall, wow, when did we start so many years ago? Your leadership of the MPHP. And again, we have always said the State Medical Association has had the right leader at the right time. Just like Dr. Young this past year, Dr. Hall knows better than anyone that the COVID pandemic has also led to a substantial increase in the overdose rate and this whole battling the disease of addiction and what the road ahead looks like. Dr. Hall is just the leader for this time. Thank you for your friendship, Dr. Hall. Please tell Marlene that how much I appreciate the time that she's going to allow you to do what you do this next year. It's going to be a great year for the State Medical Association. With that, and thank you, Danny, for letting me express my appreciation, let me now administer the oath to the council or the executive committee of the State Medical Association. If all of the executive committee leadership members would raise their right hand and repeat after me. I, and state your name.
I, Shafiq Siraj.
Solemnly swear I will with dignity and integrity.
Swear integrity.
Carry out the duties of the officer of the West Virginia State Medical Association.
Carry out the duty of the officer of the State Medical Association.
I will uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution and bylaws of the West Virginia State Medical Association.
I will uphold the Constitution of the State Medical Association of the United States.
I will devote my tenure in office to further the basic purposes of the association.
I will devote my tenure in office to support that.
To promote the art and science of medicine.
To promote the art and science of medicine.
And the betterment of public health.
And the betterment of public health.
To these responsibilities, I pledge myself.
To these responsibilities, I pledge myself.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present your officers of the 2020 and 2021 year. Thank you very much and congratulations.
With that, thank you so much, Justice Jenkins. We truly, truly, truly value you and everything that you have done for us and have had remarkable leadership for us for several years and continue to do so. With that, it is my pleasure to introduce my colleague and the West Virginia State Medical Association President-elect, Dr. Bradley Hall. Dr. Bradley Hall is a third-generation West Virginia physician originally from Clarksburg. He attended college, medical school, and family practice residency at West Virginia University. After 15 years of private practice in Bridgeport, West Virginia, he became involved with the establishment of the West Virginia Medical Professionals Health Program, serving as the foundation medical director. He has served as president and executive director of the West Virginia Society of Addiction Medicine. He is the distinguished fellow of the American Society of Addiction Medicine and is a diplomat of the American Board of Addiction Medicine. He is a certified medical review officer by both the American Association of Medical Review Officers and Medical Review Officer Certification Council. He is also a board registered interventionalist with the Association of Intervention Specialists. Nationally, Dr. Hall is a board of director and past president of the Federation of State Physician Health Programs. He has served on numerous committees and is currently co-chair of the Accreditation Review Council in the establishment of the FSPHP's Performance Enhancement and Effective Review Program for physician health programs and treatment centers. He is a member of multiple American Society memberships, and committee in multiple committees within the ASAM. He served as the Federation of State Medical Board and Impaired Physicians Committee and is updating the Impaired Physicians Policy in 2012 and is currently on the Physician Policy. Dr. Hall has also served as a member of the West Virginia Governor's Advisory Council on Substance Abuse. Dr. Hall is the co-author of the chapter on Physician Health Programs, Physician Mental Health and Well-Being, Research and Practice, New York Springer Publishing, and Absolute Addiction Psychiatry Board Review Chapter on Professionals. Dr. Hall currently serves as the Executive Medical Director of the West Virginia Medical Professionals Health Program. The licensure board designates the Physicians Health Program and the President-elect of the West Virginia State Medical Association, where he has served on the council and numerous committees. Dr. Hall is a husband, married to Marlene, and father to Rachel, Justin, Crystal, and grandfather of Dylan, Olivia, Clara, and Grant. Congratulations to our friend and colleague, Dr. Bradley Hall.
All right, I'm ready to administer the oath to Dr. Hall. Dr. Hall, if you would please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Bradley Hall, solemnly swear.
I, Bradley Hall, solemnly swear.
That I will with dignity and integrity.
That I will with dignity and integrity.
Carry out the duties as president of the West Virginia State Medical Association.
carry out the duties as president of the State West Virginia Medical Association.
I will uphold the Constitution of the United States.
I will uphold the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution and bylaws of the West Virginia State Medical Association.
And the Constitution and bylaws of the West Virginia State Medical Association.
I will devote my tenure in office to further the basic purposes of the association.
I will devote my tenure in office to further the basic purposes of the association.
To promote the art and science of medicine.
To promote the art and science of medicine.
And the betterment of public health.
And the betterment of public health.
To these responsibilities, I pledge myself.
To these responsibilities, I pledge myself.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm honored to present to you the president of the West Virginia State Medical Association, Dr. Bradley Hall.
Thank you, Evan. Just real quick, I'd like to turn to I'd like to turn to Dr. Brennig for a minute. I think he has a little special something for Dr. Young, so we're not letting you off the hook that easy. Dr. Brennig?
We'd just like to present this plaque to Dr. Young for her service over the past year.
Oh, thank you. Oh, thanks, guys. Appreciate you. Thanks. Congratulations, Dad.
So at this time, I believe I'm going to give a semi-brief presentation, 20, 25 minutes. Heather, have you shared your screen yet?
I just did. Sorry. Did you get the presenter privileges?
Yes, I believe. Can you all see my screen?
Yeah.
Good. And everyone is looking at the first slide. So again, thank you all, and especially to Sherry Young for a wonderful introduction, and even more importantly, that last line that means the world to me about the being a dad and a husband and a grandfather, making it a point to recognize my four grandchildren who are here on the call, Dylan, Olivia, Clara, and Grant, and of course their parents, and apparently the dog Mocha is there as well. And I want to thank you all for being here today. We're all becoming kind of Zoom zombies these days, and today's one of those days. So taking time out of your day to listen to me babble for a little bit is greatly appreciated. Many of you are responsible for getting here. And I want to come back and recognize Sherry Young. Listening to her talk last year, given her presidential address and just listen to the year of giving back. I really liked the theme. I thought that was, something really special. But I gotta be honest, when I was at the Greenbrier last year, I did not know she was going to work for the county, Kanawha County Health Department. And I also did not know COVID-19 was coming. So I sit here today and I say that your year of giving back, Sherry, was like beyond what you were obligated to do for this association and the public at large. And I just want to recognize that when I think about your job, my job seems a lot easier, especially these days. So thank you for your year of giving back. And the other person I want to really thank in particular is Dr. Kidner and Dr. Sharif for putting on really good meetings today and exhibiting their leadership. And Danny and his staff for converting this first face-to-face meeting to a virtual meeting. And it's really been nice to attend, and it's went really smooth. So thank you all. And last but not least, I need a brief thank you for Marlene. Marlene and I have actually been working together for 30 years. We kind of do 101 of what not to do as a husband and wife. And many of you know that I definitely need a handler and somebody to keep me straight. And if it weren't for Marlene, I wouldn't be here today. And I just want to recognize her for that. And she will continue to serve, as the first lady and continue to do what she does. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about why I do what I do, kind of across the continuum of where I started and where I am today. And sometimes I sit here today and I can't quite figure out how I got here. It wasn't on my bucket list 10 years ago, but, you know, that's life. But it was really for me about making a difference in the lives of others when I got into medicine. And that's my theme for the state medical. Each and every one of you make a difference in the lives of others every day you go to work, especially your patients. And it's a really big deal. And in the work that I do in working with physicians in their human journey, and helping them with their professional and work life, I get to watch them touch tens of thousands of lives differently in a very good way, whether it's colleagues, friends, coworkers, the boss, family, probably even the dog. But there's a ripple effect that occurs in all the work that physicians do, and being part of that is truly an honor. I'm going to start in 1951. The gentleman on the right is my father. He was a pediatrician, and in 1951, he was in the Korean War working as a medic. He had met my mother in high school, but they weren't together yet. But he was off in Korea. And on the far left is my mother's father. He was a podiatrist, and back then the scope of practice was a lot more vague, and he did a lot more things than feet. And he was the team doctor for the high school that I ended up going to, Washington Irving. And ultimately, I ended up being that team doctor some 40 years later. And sadly, in 1951, he passed away. My mother was 21, 22, and he had an acute heart attack. And back then, you didn't do well when you had those. And the guy in the middle, my first mentor, that's my grandfather, Hall. He was my father's father, a military man, served in World War II, quite frequently told me stories about New Guinea and some other places that I only heard in the history books. And he was an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. I found out in training that the Ear, Nose, and Throat Library, WVU, is actually named after him. And he used to tell me in high school and stuff that medicine was changing. And I had no idea what he was talking about back then, but he was already experiencing medicine changing. But in 1951, he was actually president of the State Medical Association. So he was one of those 150 plus leaders of this organization. So it's an honor for me to fall in his footsteps today. So roughly 9 years later, I was born, the middle child of three. Family was pretty busy, and in second or third grade, I set some goals, some of them for the wrong reason, right goal, and one of those goals was to be a physician, and I wanted to be like Granddad. That was really my only reason. I wanted to be like Granddad. I had some other goals, but that was the big one, and I studied in school and made good grades and talked so much about being a doctor like Granddad someday that it became an expectation from everybody else. By the time I got to high school, I started having some doubts. I was kind of like, you know, I've been to the doctor. I don't like blood. I don't like being a patient. I hate being in a hospital. What am I doing? But I kept going on, and in high school kind of had dual lives. I'd work real hard in school all day long because I wasn't about to do homework at night. I had other things to do. And I ran around and had a normal childhood. And I went to college and went from a small high school into WVU, and my first class had 300 students and 12 TVs on the wall, and I was just scared to death. And I think as many of us experience when we go from high school to college, it's a different caliber. And, you know, I graduated fifth in a class of high school, but in college, you're just a number, and there's a whole bunch of smart people there. So I started getting a little bit confused about what I was doing and why I was doing it. But I continued to go north, and I got into medical school late fall of my senior year, and kind of had a great second semester of my senior year, and and started medical school. And again, it was a whole nother level in the first 2 years of a volume of information difficulty that I'd never experienced, you know, and I worked really hard but I had a lot of doubts. And, you know, I understand now that we call that imposter syndrome, that we got a name for it, but you start thinking about it as a student and you realize you're getting questions. And then I got to my third year, in my third year, first rotation, I was on a psych rotation and they had this patient that was stuck on a ventilator. Medically, she could get off of it, but she was extremely anxious and depressed. And they were discharging her home on the ventilator. And after rounds and stuff in the evening, I'd go sit with her and watch TV and talk to her. And I started unplugging her ventilator and not telling her and just talking to her. And gradually got her to be willing to try to do it. And long story short, she got off her ventilator and went home. And I had no doubt I was in the right profession. I wanted to be here. I had made a difference in this lady's life, and I really, really enjoyed it, truly at the heart level. I graduated medical school in 1988, and I made this lady really, really proud. This is my mother, Sally. She passed away a couple of years ago. She was my biggest fan and my harshest critic. She was about 5'1" and didn't have any mercy, and when I got bigger than her, if I got out of line, she'd crack me in the kneecaps with a wooden spoon. So I learned how to social distance at a very young age and stay out of arm's reach with her. But she taught me some things, and one of those is persistence. I came home one night in the middle of the night after getting her Jeep hung up in the mud, and it was 2 or 3 in the morning, and I went in and asked her for help. And she sat up in bed, turned the light on. She looked me in the eye and said, "Don't come home without it." Turned the light off, rolled back over, and went to sleep. And I didn't come home without her Jeep. But I learned to be persistent and solve problems. And another thing she taught me were two of my favorite savings even today. One is, "This too shall pass," although it used to make me mad when she told me that it was true. I found it to be true today. And the other one is, "Keep the faith." Even when things are bad, just keep the faith. Everything works out okay. And I'm sure she's somewhere right now with a grin ear to ear. Being a doctor's daughter and married to a doctor, she used to talk avidly about the State Medical Association and the Healthcare Summit and going to the Greenbrier and all the county medical associations. And she truly understood what it was like to be a doctor. And she was always most proud and she would be today. And it's my only regret that she wasn't here to actually see this of everybody I know in my family. She would have really enjoyed it. By 1991, I'd already met Dr. Selby. He and I were in training together, and I met Linda Neild. She was in pediatrics at the time, and our paths have crossed at later points in life, but I do remember that that's when I first met them. And then came 1993, my pride and joy. My daughter Rachel was born, and anybody that's a parent, they know what it's like that day. And it truly changed my life, and it's changed my life today. And interestingly, that's where that last goal got met. I'd already become a doctor, and the last goal was to have a beautiful child. And I had one, and this is her when she's about 3 or 4 years old. She's on the call today. She currently works at the VA as a social worker, making a difference in the lives of others. About 10 years ago, I heard a country music song. One of the lyrics in it is talking about, "I saw God today." And it was about the birth of a child, and some guy's talking about looking through the window. And, you know, if you're a father and you had a baby and you hear that song, you know what he's talking about. I didn't know that's what happened way back then, but that's what happened. So moving on, we're into when I started practice here in Clarksburg, West Virginia. I was working for United Hospital Center, the local urgent care. Employed doctor, 6 or 8 employees, 6 to 8,000 patients a year. And before it was all said and done, we ended up buying the practice and growing it a good bit and had many departments, many employees. And I think when I sold my share in 2005, we had 120 employees, and we actually saw 100,000 patient visits that year. Looking back, but what I didn't know is I was a burned out doctor in the year 2000 and had no clue what burnout was. And I literally didn't learn it till probably 2010 working 14-hour shifts and just doing what we do. Moving on from that, in 2005 to 2007, I ran into then Senator Executive Director of State Medical Jenkins and Dr. Selby again. He was president-elect, soon to be president of State Medical and one of our esteemed presidents. And they were developing a task force to develop a physician health program. And it was kind of ironic how our paths crossed. And I started working with them and Organized Medicine and the medical boards and others. And in 2007, we passed legislation enabling the PHP to exist. And a lot of the people who are on this phone call are actually in this picture. And this was the signing that occurred in 2007. And it was one of the milestones for West Virginia, because at the time we were one of three states that did not have a PHP. And moving on to 2016, that same PHP ran by myself and the Medical Board of West Virginia under the direction of Bob Knittle there on the left. We were asked to give a presentation at the Federation of State Medical Boards talking about the model we had developed in West Virginia, where the boards actually work collaboratively with the PHP, and in their own terminology, they would say 1 + 1 = 3 when you guys work together. So I was very honored to do that, and I was also the incoming president of the Federation of Physician Health Programs, and it's one of those things where you sit in that, I remember sitting at that table thinking, how did I get here, and how I've all my life just kind of fell upward, you know, as you go through life and it changes and you end up different places, even if they weren't on your bucket list. And the graph on the right, really just my point is the first 5 years of the PHP's availability for the ill professional, we had over a 500% growth rate of physicians coming in to get help. So the need was out there, and that growth has continued since that time. So all in all, I've been doing this work for about 30 years, making a difference in the lives of others. And as part of that, what I've watched happen in these doctors' lives is this transition from what I call order to disorder and then reorder. Life happens and things change, and that whole transition is no different than birth and death. You know, we all go through this order, disorder, reorder period, and even the seasons from summer to fall to winter is order and disorder and reorder. And just remember that point. I'll come back to it during this presentation, because then came COVID-19. And we are all very aware of the stress and the stuff that's going on in the nation. And I'm not going to get into a bunch of details, but we are very aware we have a pandemic going on, and there's a cross-pollination with the addiction epidemic, with overdose deaths and suicides and civil unrest, and physician distress, burnout, and moral injury is in here too. And we don't talk about that a whole lot. There's challenges that physicians are facing today. You know, this is one of the first pandemics we've had in 100 years. It's new medicine. We didn't have a vaccine. We didn't know how to treat it. It's affected our work. We're kind of flying blind with everything. And not to mention the politics and the economy that's been impacted everywhere from the state, federal, global level, and who knows, maybe even the solar system, the way this is looking. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And unfortunately for doctors, it affects all your relationships with people, places, and things, and not necessarily in a good way. Those psychosocial stressors that everybody's going through, not just healthcare professionals, but healthcare professionals has some unique consequences of that. But we all have the fear of the disease for family and friends, and how it's isolation, and we're not being able to connect. And, you know, a good example of this is the connection that we would have at the Greenbrier with this event compared to doing it over telemedicine or virtual. It's just not the same. And adapting to telemedicine itself with patient care and the hospital issues and the deaths. And the thing that caught my attention about this slide more than anything else on the right, this young doctor, I was sitting here thinking, I wonder if this is in New York and she's just praying. Because at some point in time, I think some of those doctors reached a point where that's the only place they had to turn in the peak of that illness. And the doctor personality is pretty amazing. We're trained for this kind of thing. We're problem solvers. We're really good at sprint. We get into the solution and we fix things. We work collaboratively. collectively, and we make a difference in the lives of others, especially our patients. We're problem solvers. The problem is when it turns into a marathon, adrenaline junkies don't do well, and it ends up affecting your nervous system and your whole body and all your hormones. And off of that, you end up affecting the whole human condition physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually even. And it's not good. And there's an aftermath to it. You know, doctors are a pretty resilient bunch, but we're going to be seeing, I believe, more depression and more suicides and other psychiatric disorders, anxiety, substance misuse. We know the public out there drinking more than ever, and alcohol sales have went through the roof. You know, you have more time to use substances, and unfortunately, we may see doctors just wanting to leave medicine because of the moral injury and the burnout that's being added to. This was kind of a scary statistic I saw last week, and I had to add it to the slide deck from the MMWR and the CDC. It was a survey, so it wasn't a study, but it makes some salient points that about 40% of the survey respondents had at least one adverse mental or behavioral health condition, and nearly a third are having anxiety and depression, another quarter are depressed, greater than 10% are admitting to increase in their substance use related to stress. The one that got my attention is suicide. In the last 30 days, over 10% of people who did this survey were actually having suicidal thoughts. And the two subcategories that really bother me are 18 to 24-year-olds, which are very high compared to some of the other subgroups, and essential workers. And essential workers is you all. That's us. We are essential workers. So this is having a negative effect on everybody, and these numbers are liable to get worse. I got to thank Danny Scalise for telling me about this slide and Bethany helping me find it from the newspaper in North Carolina. I was able to edit it a little bit, so we have a cluster F. But I want to point out the complex and utterly disordered and mismanaged situation. I'm not convinced it's that mismanaged. You know, it's just a difficult situation. But the real point there is that word disordered. We are in the middle of a lot of disorder right now at multiple levels. And I think it uniquely positions the State Medical Association to have something to offer the others wouldn't necessarily have. So when you look at the physician distress, what we know is, you know, physicians don't do the human thing very well. We're going to be in a human doing, but not necessarily a human being. We live a vertical relationship at work, and then we get out in our family and friends, and it's more of a horizontal relationship, and we kind of forget to make that shift. We're almost trained to stay a professional and we're not good at having feelings and asking for help and recognizing we're struggling. So a lot of my goals in the work that I do is to teach students, residents, and docs I work with how to be at ease with the disease of being human. Because that's just a part of life, and doctors aren't really good at stopping and leaning into the discomfort and feeling discomfort. They're also not good at helping themselves. They put everybody else first. And it's kind of like the airplane analogy where if you're with your child, you really, really need to put your mask on first, then your child. If you don't take care of you, you're not going to be around here to take care of anybody else anyways. And that's counterintuitive to help for healthcare professionals. So we know we got this balancing act going on, and I don't even call it a balancing act. I don't know about you all, but I can't balance anything when it comes to work life. I do work life integration is probably a better word for me because that balance is a seesaw that always seems to be moving. And we know many doctors are already burned out before all this happened. And there's strategies at the personal level and at the system level that we can do. And we're all working on that stuff. But the problem with physicians is it's reaching a point where, you know, if you look at burnout, it occurs anytime there's a major mismatch between the nature of the job and the nature of the person who actually does the job. So what we are sometimes is walking around with a two-prong cord looking for a two-prong hole that doesn't exist. And that's not going to work out well for us. And we always put our patients first. And I think it's kind of a compounding factor. And no talk would be appropriate if we didn't touch on moral injury, which came out of the military. And if you think of the 18-year-old kid pictures you saw back in Korea, World War II, with this young man with a gun and blood on his face who probably grew up in Oklahoma, was doing things he never planned on being doing. You can understand where that term comes from, but that's also what's going on with physicians in healthcare. And you can really, I liked how Diane Silver described it as just a deep soul wound. And that there's doctors out there, you mentioned that to them, and they actually understand that and they relate to it. For doctors, what we're about is providing high quality care and healing. And we have a hard time understanding anything that interferes with that, whether it's electronic medical records or other system issues or COVID-19, anything that gets in the way of taking care of our patients, we don't understand. And it's not a physician weakness, no more than burnout is. You know, it's a system-wide problem, and we are part of the problem, and we are part of the solution. But even burnout came out, and it kind of made the problem lie within the physician when it was only partly true. It was a kind of a misdirected good name that we're getting our brain around, and we start understanding now there's a lot more to it than at the individual level, and that's true for moral injury too. So what's happened here is we already had kind of a disheartened and dispirited workforce. Doctors weren't real happy. And now we have developed COVID-19, so we more or less have a pandemic within a pandemic. And that's what we're dealing with. And when you start adding other confounders like financial crises and family issues, managing acute and chronic stress, it's very difficult for docs. And docs who have been kind of brought up in this culture of silence, where we just keep on trucking and expressing pain, and that we're struggling is, you know, in our own mind, felt to be a weakness, and we're not really good at that. And, you know, some sort of peer support and things like that would be very beneficial. And I always hated this quote, misery is optional. There were times in my life when I was really miserable, and if somebody would have said that to me, I would have punched them. You know, thinking, you know, if you lived my life right now, you'd be pretty miserable too. But I come to understand suffering differently. And suffering really is just craving life to be different than what it really is. You know, life is what it is. We all struggle. We all have our own smorgasbord to struggle. And to practice acceptance of life as it is. And that doesn't mean you get to like it, but you can accept the way it is. And it makes it a little bit easier to deal with. And how we perceive it and experience is much better. I love that term forgiveness, just forgiving reality for what it is. There's not a day get up anymore that I don't just forgive COVID-19 for being what it is, because I don't know what else to say right now. Doctors are a very resilient bunch. That's one of the beauties in it. It doesn't take much for a doctor to do better. That resilience can be trained. It can be taught. It can be brought to your attention. And I never heard about it in medical school, and I have this in here because it really is about the bounce back. But one of those things that's always stuck with me back in the training days was I was doing trauma surgery, and a young man that was my age died in my arms, traumatic car wreck. And 15 minutes later, I was down the hall seeing a sore throat in another exam room, and nobody talked about it. It was like it never happened. And all evening, I can remember thinking, you know, that just happened, and we all went on as if it never even happened. We didn't stop and process it. You know, that may be self-centered, but I thought nobody ever realized that the kid was the same age as me. And that was a hard one to swallow. We're much better now. All the deans are much more aggressive about teaching wellness, and that's less of an issue. So life is really an opportunity, and we can benefit from it. And gotta love Mother Teresa. She comes up with these one-liners. I think this actually applies to the situation right now, and even the State Medical Association. We need to be thinking opportunity in what's going on with all the conditions of the world and healthcare and society at large. And it really is all about our leadership. And that's everybody on this call. You wouldn't be here if you weren't a leader. And it's not just a position. It's actually a servant leader, and that's what you all do. I've watched it, and that's what makes things happen. You all are change agents, you know, and during these unprecedented times, leadership is what helps us figure out how to go through changes we may not want to do. The leaders aren't self-seeking. They march to the beat of a larger mission, and I've seen that firsthand from all of you all. And it always depends on a little bit of don't be afraid of yourself, and you got to learn to speak up and say things even that no one else wants to say. And it's about being that voice. And, you know, that voice is what State Medical is. It is the voice of physicians. The real challenge is change. Nobody likes change. Everything is impermanent. Even Hoover Dam's going to fall over someday, and we don't like it. I like to get in my little rut and then decorate it and just live there and feel very comfortable. And that doesn't work very well. And you'll hear Dr. Marsh talk about the Black Swan event. And, you know, Black Swan events are things that happen that change life forever as we know it. And a good example of that would be the atom bomb or 9/11, invention of the laptop, the internet, and COVID-19. COVID-19 is going to change everything for a long time. And we have this inherent resistance to change, and some things that have helped me address that was, you know, recognizing that the most dangerous opinion I have is actually the highest opinion of my own opinion, especially when I'm wrong, because then I'm not teachable. And I need to listen to understand, not to reply. Just ask Marlene. She tells me to listen, not to reply. And that way I'm teachable. Because what I found more than anything is every viewpoint that I've ever discussed with anybody is a view from a point. And if I don't listen, I don't understand their view from a little different angle, and I can't learn anything, and I can't change, and I don't want to change. Actually, sometimes I'm more comfortable with the misery I've become accustomed to than leaning into the discomfort of facing the fear of the unknown of change that might actually feel better. You know, we got to love our ruts. And I personally think sometimes I'm just hypnotized by my life and my culture and my own personality because I don't like change. I really don't. But I have learned to lean into it better, and I think we can do more of that. And that's where the State Medical Association comes in. The State Medical Association is all about physicians, public, and patients. But I think we do very good in those roles. But I think we could do better with our membership and focusing on that and recognizing that we do have a unified voice, because right now the House of Medicine itself is in that same cycle of order, disorder, and reorder. And I dare to say that we're in the disorder phase. And what's State Medical's role in how we move forward from here and reorder? And if you want to see the future of the State Medical Association as a great leader, don't look at the past. Don't look at where we are today. Look where we want to be in 5 years. And then figure out what's the next step to head that direction. And I don't have an answer, but I think that's the question we need to be asking. So my personal vision and goals is to not have a plan. Best way to make God laugh is have a plan. So I don't have a plan. I have vision. That vision is to utilize the State Medical Association to enhance the physician collaboration, communication, and accountability in these unprecedented times. By taking the difference you make in the lives of others and your patients and make it even bigger and into this organization. And we have to do it together. And we're going to have to look at governance in this day and age of technology and the speed of things that are going and the structure. We need a nimble organization. It needs to be physically responsible and survivable financially to be here in 5 years. We need to address our membership expansion and our member benefits. And the advocacy. And I put advocacy last year because I got a kick out of realizing that's the part we do right. Under Danny's leadership, we do some pretty powerful advocacy in the legislation, and we're doing that part right. And I want to recognize that probably better than we've done in years. But coming back to the governance and the physical responsibility in our membership, if we don't get those three right, we won't be here in 5 years to do advocacy. So without those other three pieces coming into alignment, we're not going to be able to carry out what we're already doing good today. Control is an illusion. You know, I always think I have control when everything's going my way. When the grandkids behave and do everything right, I am in control and alive and in charge. But when they're not, I'm not. And what I recognize is, you know, control is an illusion. It's just a kind of a hint to stop and hit the pause button and to contemplate what we can do about our current situation. And I kind of challenge the state medical leadership to hit the pause button and look at where we are and where we're going and where we want to be and see if we want to do anything different. Because the threats here and now, everything I see with COVID, burnout, and everything else that's going on. So in the end, the point I have is to make a unity of purpose and some kind of reorder in that order, disorder, reorder cycle. And it's going to take all of us. And we will all continue to make a difference in the lives of others. But what we need reminded of as physicians is you are another. So you make a difference in your own life first, and you'll be able to make a difference in other lives too. And we can do this together much more than any one of us alone. You know, I'd rather see us working like a bunch of ants. You know, they do great work collaboratively. If doctors could work like ants, we would be doing something. And the last thing I'll say is we can build on a life that we are for. We cannot build on a life that we are against. So if we can get that unity of what we're for, I think we can get some things done. And the last thing I'll say is I love you all and there isn't a darn thing you can do about it. So thank you. The end. Sherry, did you want to say anything else?
Yes, Dr. Hall, thank you so much for that presentation. And in 8 months, I have not heard anybody say so eloquently and perfectly the behavioral health challenges that we have with COVID and everything that we're experiencing. And I think this is the year for you to be at the helm. And I very much look forward to having you as president. And thank you for all that you do. Thank all of you for all that you do.
Thank you.
With that, I think that's the end of our 4 o'clock session. So, one last thing. One last thing before we close, we do have the council meeting and that will begin at 5 p.m. And, we'll give everybody a little break until then. But until then, thank you, everyone, and congratulations, Dr. Hall. Thank you.